This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 11, where we'll talk about our predictions for 2014. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Okay, so what's been going on, AC?
Oh, I have had a technical or hardware life complete hell since we last recorded here. I'm working on my last module for the Pluralsight Advanced Workflow SharePoint 2013 course, and I was all set to deliver it by the end of the week this week. And then on Monday afternoon, I'd say about 2 o'clock my time, all of a sudden my laptop got a little slow, so I decided, let's do a reboot and let's see if that cleans things up. And it never came back. And come to find out, long story short, I thought it was just the OS. It ended up being a much bigger thing that apparently the whole laptop is completely dead, to where Lenovo is telling me I have to ship it in for out of warranty repair, which is not going to be cheap. It's going to be pretty pricey. So I finally just said, you know what? Forget this. I'm just going to end up moving on. So I guess maybe.
Yeah, hardware issues suck, don't they?
Oh my God. Well, I fought for 36 hours using different Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1 install media. I tried downloading them multiple times. I tried putting them on different CDs, different flash drives to install it. I tried installing on different drives between physical spindles, three different SSD drives, and finally just said, you know what? Forget it. I've had this laptop for twice as long as I normally have it. I give up. It's time for a new machine. So I did something that I think it might be a bit on the crazy side. but it actually makes sense to actually try it out. I actually get a month to try out my solution and decide if I want to keep this or if I want to wait to go a different direction. So I've always been a Lenovo guy. I'll keep this as short as I can. But always been a Lenovo guy. I decided that I was going to give a. I wanted to go with a Lenovo ThinkPad W530. I had a W520. I was going to go with the W530, and then I saw it was on a 4-week delay for shipping. Couldn't figure out why. Yeah, I was just like, that's ridiculous. I can't be out of commission that long. So I said, well, let me check out, let me see why this is. And it ends up that they announced a W540, which looks like a very cool machine, very nice machine. But it's not available yet. And the rumors are it won't be available until January, specifically January the 7th. Well, that day actually has a bit of coincidence in it. So I saw that, you know, I'm not a Dell person. I didn't want to go try and, you know, learn about all the different Asus lines, all these lines. I was either a Lenovo or I wasn't. And so I said, you know what? I talked to a few people that had done this recently. And I went out to the local Apple store and I bought a top-of-the-line MacBook Pro. It's got, you know, granted it only maxes out at 16 gigs as far as the RAM goes, but I talked to a few people that have even shown in videos that SharePoint 2013 VMs run better than a W520. So I want to try it out, but here's the whole reason that just kind of made it to where it was a kind of an impulse buy that turned into being really a month-long trial. They have a 14-day money-back return policy at an Apple store. And the guy said, well, that's actually going to apply for Christmas. So if you buy something in the store around Christmas time, it's good. Well, the 14-day money-back guarantee doesn't start until Christmas Day. 14 days from Christmas Day is coincidentally January the 7th. So I effectively get to play with this device, see if it's going to work and see if it's going to give me satisfy my needs for a little under a month. And if it doesn't work, then I'll return it. And if January the 7th is in fact the day that the W540 goes on sale, I'll rush out and I'll return the Apple and I'll turn around and order a W540. So,
yeah, it looks like it's certainly worth a trial, right? To see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean I built one Windows 8.1 VM. Amazed that it actually installed in about 5 minutes.
Wow.
So installed a bunch of other stuff that I have. I already had a MacBook Air that I was playing with, but it can't do VMs, the size VMs you need for SharePoint. So we'll see if it works. If it does, great. If not, you know, it was a fun little trial, and we got firsthand experience, and I wouldn't have lost anything. So it's not going to spend days and days configuring this guy.
Yeah, worth checking out.
Yeah. So what's up with you?
This week had a couple of interesting things go on. We talked about my involvement with building an app called MyTrips for TripIt.com. So I built that app for Windows Phone and for Windows 8. But I've been getting a few reports of people not being able to sign in on the Windows 8 app. And so I tried it out, and sure enough, I couldn't sign into my own app either. And it looks like something's changed with the TripIt service, their authentication flow, when it's being used off a Windows 8.1 client application with the web authentication broker, which is a component that you can use in your Windows 8 apps that helps you deal with OAuth sign-in flows. And so what I found is if I pointed that broker component at the mobile OAuth flow, and the reason it was on the mobile OAuth flow because the mobile UI works best on a touchscreen interface, I found, and it's nicely formatted and it sits just in a little window that works well with that web authentication broker. And if I use the mobile URL, it used to work fine. And now when you go to sign in, it says authentication failed at the end of the flow and the app never gets the tokens. Whereas if I point it at the desktop URL for the exact same OAuth flow, right? So signing in with the same credentials, the same application ID, the same everything, except the URL is the desktop version of the sign-in page instead of the mobile version of the sign-in page, then people can sign into my app and the OAuth flow goes end-to-end.
Huh. That's crazy.
And so, totally. So I can't figure out whether it's something wrong at the TripIt end of things. It certainly feels that way because something changed and the flow used to work and now it doesn't work. Or if it's something that's changed in Windows 8.1 with the web authentication broker and something's not working quite right with the TripIt OAuth flow for mobile. Now, the odd thing is the mobile flow is not broken because you can sign in on my Trips app on my phone, which uses the exact same mobile OAuth flow, and that works fine. It's just on Windows 8. So there's something going wrong, and I don't know what.
That sounds fun. Those are always fun ones to figure out. It's interesting you say that because I actually had a friend recently who was telling me that he switched over. He just got an 8.1 device and used my Trips. I told him about your app, and he's like, yeah, I can't sign into it. You got to go figure it out. I'm like,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a slew of bad reviews in the store right now saying I can't sign in.
Ouch.
And I've reached out to TripIt to ask for their assistance, and they're like, and I can't repro it. I'm like, you're not reproing it on Windows 8 in a custom app the exact same way. So my short-term fix is to change my app to use the desktop sign-in UI, which is not ideal because it's not as formatted as nicely for touch devices. But it does work. The unfortunate thing is I've got to go through the App Store submission process to put that bug fix through. And that's a pain.
That sucks.
It's a bit of a shame, but never mind. I'll get there. So if you're listening and you've tried to use my Trips, please bear with me while I get it sorted out.
How do you communicate to your users? Like when something like that happens, I mean, I know you've got people that are putting stuff in the reviews in the store. I guess you can't really respond to them. Is there any way that you can actually communicate directly down to your users?
Not really. No. I mean, if somebody leaves you a bad review in the store, as far as I can tell, there's no way to get in touch with them to say, hey, I've fixed the problem. Would you mind trying it again and then changing your review? It's a bit sucky because you end up with a bad review and not being able to get back in touch with them to rectify the problem, right? And so either they don't use your app again and you've lost that user, or you've got a bad review in the store forever.
Yeah,
so
that's even worse. I mean, you got bad marketing that's out there, and even once it's resolved, you can't even go. I mean, everybody has issues with stuff. Something's going to break, and it's how you. I always thought you always find out how great a company is or how great a product is when how fast the company is going to address the issue. And and how they deal with problems. And so it's in this case, I look at it as like, okay, it's an opportunity, but it's hard to communicate with your user base to let them know.
Yeah.
Aside from just a standard, you know, kind of word of mouth thing, that's rough.
Yeah, and this is actually one thing that makes things good app developers versus bad app developers is the ability for your users to get in touch with you through your app. So in all my apps, I put an email address and a contact us button and all that sort of stuff. And so I've actually had quite a lot of users email me about this issue. And I reply saying, you know, I'm working on a fix. I'm working with Tripit to try and rectify it. Please bear with me. I'll get back in touch when I've fixed it. And they're like, okay, really sorry to hear that. I hope you get it sorted out soon. Thanks for the update. So I think that's the best I can do.
Is there, so let me ask you this. Is there any, you don't have to have a Tripit login in order for to be able to have the app actually load and work. It's just that the app is kind of useless unless you log in, right?
No, the first thing, when the app first runs, you have to sign into it with your going through the Tripit auth flow. Yeah.
There's a Windows 8 app that I use for like tracking packages, FedEx, UPS, USPS, all those different ones. And I noticed in the top right corner, he's got a little thing for news that he uses to communicate to people. And so that was one of the, when something happens or when something breaks, he usually lets people know that way. And so you can see they're like, oh no, I got no more updates coming from UPS. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I go look in the news, like, oh, there's news updates. So
the good thing is it continues to work for people that have already signed in, right? Because it caches your credentials, your tokens, and the app will continue to work. It's just for new users, which are the ones you want to make really happy too.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's unfortunate. And the other thing is if there's another, like a security bug or something I need to fix, I can't submit the update to the store because the people that test the app need to be able to sign in. I really have to get the sign-in problem sorted.
Yeah, that sucks.
I've got a fix for it. I just got to get it in the store. So, anywho, so on to the news. Just a short little bit of news that came out today from Microsoft around Azure and partners. So they announced a thing called the Cloud OS Network, which is a group of 25 partners currently around the world and in 99 markets, I think they cover around the world. And the idea behind this is that it's a sort of it's a group of partners, hosters and system integrators and so forth that sort of have good cloud hybrid offerings or services on the Microsoft stack. And so what Microsoft are trying to do here is drive customers using additional partner offerings to use things like Azure and Office 365, along with all of the products and things that Microsoft do to help drive a hybrid cloud story. So things like System Center, the Azure Pack, Hyper-V on-prem, all of those sorts of things. And so it's not a product they're announcing, it's more of an initiative. And so these partners, you'll be able to, you know, they're quite big partners around the world as well, like Fujitsu and things, I think. And so you'd be able to go to them and say, hey, I want to be able to leverage the cloud, and they can help you with some of their service offerings, some of their own products, coupled with the Microsoft stack in the cloud and on-prem.
That's pretty cool. I didn't see that.
So it's not so much of a product push, it's more of a marketing sort of initiative, but we'll hopefully get people over the line and bring together the Microsoft products plus the partner services and give a really nice hybrid story.
Yeah, very.
At least that's my take from my initial quick read of the post.
Deep analysis of the quick news, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Cool news.
Okay, so how about we talk about some predictions for 2014? So around this time of the year, everybody's thinking about what's coming up in the next calendar year, obviously, and what we thought we'd do is do a quick run through. We have five predictions each for 2014, ranging in from all sorts of different topics through to, you know, just, you know, cloud topics through to Microsoft topics through to SharePoint topics, a couple of different things thrown in there. So we thought we'd go back and forth and work through each of our five predictions and just sort of lay it out there to see what we come up with, and also it'll give us something to refer back to during next calendar year to see how we've gone with our predictions and see how completely crazy we were or on the money. You know, I'm not sure exactly where we're going to land, but it'll be kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, these are fun episodes to hear on other podcasts, hearing them give their predictions and then come back and do the review and see how far off the mark they were. But we'll see. Yeah. Maybe we don't have a clue what we're talking about, so we're not ones to offer you stock advice, but
yeah, I was going to say, people at home, don't put money on these.
Okay, just let us do it.
Yeah, right. So with that said, why don't I kick off with my first prediction?
Go for it.
So this is in no particular order of relevancy, or you know, saying how I think this will pay off. It's more of just a random assortment and ordering. So my first prediction is hockey stick cloud effect. So what I mean by this is I feel like this next calendar year has the potential to be a year where orgs sort of are finally getting over their nerves of doing stuff in the cloud. And I know that's pretty bold, and I don't mean that the whole universe is going to switch over to suddenly just using the cloud, but I feel like we've been pushing this uphill battle for about the last 4 or 5 years with the cloud, where it's been slowly sort of the seeds are being planted and people are starting to take notice, but people have been pretty standoffish, especially large organizations. And I feel like this calendar year is probably the one where I believe we're going to see a really decent uptick in adoption, and not just from a pure numbers on numbers point of view, but I mean from a sort of the hockey stick, right? You bubble along for a while and you get that hockey stick effect where adoption just starts ramping up exponentially. And I have a feeling that's going to start happening this year. So I think, you know, back in the old days, IT used to be a differentiator for organizations. Used to be like, you know, organizations used to want to put tons of money into IT and do better for automating their processes against their competition and being able to differentiate and be more efficient that way. And now I feel like we're almost come full circle again, where we're going to start seeing organizations using and leveraging the cloud to differentiate from their competition. And I know that we have customers that are trying to do this already and sort of leveraging the cloud to innovate. And so I think that's part of the stuff that's gone into the reason why I think this prediction may come true.
That's a good prediction. I am curious to see if it turns out that way, or see if we have companies have the opposite knee-jerk reaction to all the NSA and intelligence kind of listening in, but seeing the more recent news about the big guys pushing back on the U.S. government and saying they need to do something. It's one of the few times you see Microsoft and Google and Amazon and Apple kind of hold hands and say, you got to stop doing this.
Yeah, so, well, that is interesting, but I think also organizations are slightly naive if they think that isn't already happening to their stuff on-prem.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm. Yeah, good prediction.
We'll see.
So my first prediction, it's funny looking at all the predictions we have, because I think of the five that we each have here, there's a pretty good tie-in between four of them where we both are going to talk about almost the exact same topic. But this one, I think we definitely chose kind of a different choice here. The first one I'll say is around Office 365. And the way I phrase it is that I think things will settle down a good bit. Microsoft is going to start to get things really, really right with Office 365, and it's going to start to grow. And when I say by this, I mean like the updates that we have, the update cadence that we have for Office 365. I think that we're going to see Microsoft do a better job of communicating updates that are coming out with people. They've already started this with some of their with some pages on their site that kind of show where things are coming, when what kind of updates are rolling out and stuff, roadmap with Yammer. I think we're going to see the APIs kind of get cleaned up a bit in terms of not having updates, APIs breaking on us as the releases come out. A little more predictability. I think that, you know, they're learning from their mistakes in the past in this first year, and I think that we'll see a much better story going forward. I'm personally very curious to see what they say in March about these updates going forward with the SharePoint conference. So, but around Office 365, I do think things will settle down and we'll start to get things a little bit in a better story going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good prediction. I think it's it's been a bit of a rocky road over the last couple of years. And I think they're starting to get things really right and start understanding how to run the service better and things. So this year should be pretty good for that.
Yep.
Excellent. So my number two prediction is that Microsoft will win over AWS and Google for the enterprise cloud in a big way. So historically, Google haven't played too much in this space. We're seeing, you know, as per the last episode, we're seeing them stepping into the Google Compute Engine and so forth. But AWS or Amazon Web Services have really been the leader in this space. A lot of organizations use AWS for running virtual machines and infrastructure as a service in their cloud. And I feel like this is the year that that Azure will really take off and Microsoft will win over those enterprise customers. The reasons I say that for are Azure is an amazing product now. They're on a really good footing against Amazon, and I wish that train would just decide to stop tooting in the background and get the hell out of my podcast.
You've got a train in the background. I have a dog barking in the background that I hope that when we produce the show we can cut all that stuff out, but we're gonna have to just apologize for some of the background noise that we got here.
Yeah, it's like they know. Anywho, Azure have got an amazing product now. It stands up really well against AWS. And Microsoft, of all of the companies in the world, know how to sell to the enterprise in a really deep way. They've got a worldwide sales force that are deeply entrenched in every enterprise customer there is, and they know how to sell software to those companies. And so I think we'll start seeing them really firing on all four and doubling down their sales effort on pushing Azure and other cloud offerings that Microsoft has, like Office 365. To those customers, and we'll start seeing them win over AWS and Google, hand over fist, I think, in this next calendar.
That's a great prediction. I mean, one of my predictions was that I thought that Azure was going to grow significantly. It was going to have a much more feature parity with Amazon Web Services and AWS. I think things are just, everything you said, I'm not going to restate what you said, but I completely agree that we're going to see Microsoft do a much better job in terms of beating out the competition between Amazon and with Google on enterprise cloud business. I think that they are probably also going to start to have a much better approach and also getting the attention and the adoption of a lot more startups. A lot of startups look at what they've done with AWS, and they see the cost associated with AWS. And you see more and more stories of people that use AWS, but when they start to grow to any kind of significant kind of critical volume, then they start standing up their own private clouds because it's just so expensive. Hopefully Microsoft can actually come out to have nice price comparisons there to where they could battle that perception, and they can take a lot of that business away from Amazon. But I absolutely love having both these companies having really good products. I hope they both continue this, because good competition is just going to lead to better products all around for us. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's going to be really tough to win over the startup crowd from the Valley just because it's Microsoft and they're kind of like ABMers down there. Mm-hmm. They're kind of anybody but Microsoft. So they're going to have a really tough time with startups, but I think enterprise is a total win, and that's where a ton of the money is too.
Yeah, completely agree.
Okay, so my number three prediction is around SharePoint and Office 365. I think in the next calendar year, we'll see the final packaged on-prem version of SharePoint. And basically from that point on, it'll be a series of cumulative updates, service packs, and maybe some feature packs. I guess that's what a major package version is really anyway, is a whole bunch of fixes, a whole bunch of new features. So I don't know, maybe this point is moot, but I think next year we'll see the final on-prem major packaged version of SharePoint. And obviously there's a huge push for the cloud. I don't think Microsoft are leaving on-prem customers behind. They've got too much invested, so they'll continue to support that. And we've heard comments from the SharePoint team to that effect. So I wouldn't go panicking thinking you're going to be left out in the dark. But I definitely think, you won't be able to get you haven't been able to get a box product of SharePoint for some time, but a major version of SharePoint, I think we'll see one more and then that'll be it. obviously for some time the service has been first, so there's been updates going on to Office 365 and so forth, and I just think that people need to come to terms with this new cadence and style of release and just kind of get over it, because it's happening whether you like it or not, and you can whinge and moan all you like, but it's going to happen whether you like it or not. So all the vendors are doing it. Microsoft's no different. And I think we've seen the height of on-prem software, and we're on the downhill slide.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that. I have two predictions that are kind of dovetail into the same thing. So I'm going to kind of do these back to back. But I would say my third prediction is that on-prem customers are going to start looking to other solutions. And the fourth one is around the SharePoint brand diminishing. So let me kind of explain what I mean by this. So you said in your prediction, you were talking about, you know, that on-prem customers really need to get over it. And that's a lot of the attitude that I see coming from Redmond, from Microsoft. And, you know, while we see these posts coming out and they're talking about things like, you know, oh, no, we're dedicated to on-prem and, oh, we're doing hybrid and all this kind of stuff. It's obvious, you know, that, yes, services is first, that Office 365 is first. Some of the features in 365 will trickle down into packaged products, updates, however you want to call it, yearly releases and stuff. I've seen different discussions, both internal and external, where they say that. But without going into the real details or nuts and bolts of it, you know, I think that for the most part, the on-prem stuff is kind of diminishing. With that, with my third prediction was that on-prem customers will start looking to other solutions. We're seeing customers do that already. I'm seeing people are not, you know, they're not thrilled with this whole social is completely hosted in the cloud and I can't have it within my organization. So in terms of like with Yammer, with SharePoint. So you see them looking to other solutions on how they can keep this stuff both just within their organization in different ways from different vendors, looking at somebody like a Jive or, you know, whoever it may be.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I sort of feel like it's a temporary fix to a problem, though.
Yeah,
and
well, it is.
If I was a company, I wouldn't be building a product for on-prem or betting the farm on-prem. That's for sure.
It is, but I think there will always be customers that cannot move their stuff to the cloud for different reasons, for legal, for jurisdiction, for whatever reasons they have to do. Other products that I see them looking to as well are things like enterprise content management or the WCM workload as well. People are really looking at other products instead of looking at SharePoint for these things because, you know, ECM and WCM, in my mind, they don't really make a whole lot of sense. ECM does to a certain point in the cloud because you've got the integration in Office 365 of both Exchange 2013 and SharePoint, but there's a lot of on-prem data that your cloud is not going to be able to see, file shares or whatever have you.
Yeah.
Same thing on the WCM side. I don't see a company really wanting to put a WCM internetfacing.com site in the cloud and having it hosted by Microsoft. They want more control over this. Even if it's SharePoint running as IaaS on in Azure, on virtual machines in Azure, that's a great solution. But I don't see that being something that SharePoint's going to go with. They're looking more to Sitecore. They're looking more to open source engines. I mean, as a WCM guy, I see more and more people actually reaching out to me and they're saying, what about the other alternatives? We're looking to get off of SharePoint as a WCM, which is disappointing, but I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff I see why, because there's no digital, digital marketing or any kind of like the real campaign management inside of SharePoint, which we need.
Yeah. No,
now,
definitely.
To go into my fourth prediction, which kind of dovetails into what you said in my third point, which was I thought that the SharePoint brand is going to start to diminish. And, you know, this is part in saying that, you know, we see Microsoft. What I mean by this is that you see Microsoft pushing Office 365 more, but they're not pushing SharePoint Online. They're not pushing Exchange Online. They're not pushing these different components of Office 365. They're pushing Office 365 as a whole. And then you have different plans on what features you want. I think this makes the most sense from Microsoft's perspective, that they don't want you to think SharePoint. They want you to think Office 360. They want you to think Office 365.
Yeah. No, I agree with that one too. I think, you know, the sales pitch for 365 is 365 and should be 365, and it's all of its constituent components. And I think we've got to get out of this mindset of you know, the four or five different products that that entails mm-hmm. being separate. It's one sort of big cohesive thing that works for you.
Yeah.
And it gets less about picking pieces off the shelf and just using the service.
Yeah. And I, the other thing too about this, when I say the SharePoint brand is diminishing, I mean, you know, we had this time from, you know, we had this growth going from like 2003, 2004, 2005, when we hit 2007 release, it really kind of hit this inflection point where you saw a huge adoption when the 2007 release came out. And with 2010, you saw about half of those customers upgrade. And with 2013, you are, in terms of the on-prem guys, you're seeing about the same kind of adoption, or at least from my perspective, we are, of 2010 that we saw with, or of 2013 that we saw with 2010. If not a little bit less. And so I'm seeing a lot more ISVs and consultancies that used to be completely dedicated just on the SharePoint business. They are kind of hedging their bets, or they are diversifying, which makes the most sense. I mean, it's a responsible thing for them to do, but they're hedging their bets and they're looking at other solutions as well. It's focusing on Azure-based solutions or focusing on other offerings that they have. The last part that I'll say too about this SharePoint brand will diminish is that unless things change with Microsoft providing more details around the current audience in the marketplace and the demographics of that audience, I don't see the SharePoint store flourishing in this next year. I see it kind of being pretty stagnant. I see, if anything, the SharePoint store is not an attractive marketplace, but rather just ISVs using it as a deployment vehicle for their products and then handling subscription stuff and everything outside of the store, handling the cost and everything and the user account management all outside the store. The only thing the store is really going to be used for is just easy way for customers to install an application, to get an identity and a way to phone home, get into the application, to get into your SharePoint environment.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It'll, I think, you've got to make the Microsoft have got to make the leap to the cloud before that stuff becomes attractive and get all their customers over there. And I think that's going to take not this next year; it'll probably be the year after. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so prediction number four from me. So we have the SharePoint conference coming up in March. I suspect, I have absolutely no idea if this is, you know, true or not, or will come true. But it makes sense, following on from those last set of predictions, that the SharePoint conference in March will be the last one. And, you know, that sounds pretty brutal and things like that. But I suspect going forward we're going to see a different conference, not no conference. I think it just won't be called the SharePoint conference. I think we're going to have an Office 365 conference instead. And that, from my point of view, it makes complete and utter sense to do that. Where you've got no solution is just SharePoint, whether it be in the cloud or on-prem, right? There's always other pieces of the puzzle involved. And so it makes sense for those different constituent parts to be represented under one umbrella. And I would definitely like to see something larger than just SharePoint happen. And that's I feel quite emotional when I say that, because I've got a fairly deeply rooted connection to the SharePoint conference, having been on the team that ran a couple of them. And it will be sad, but I'm looking forward to the next wave. And again, it's just a prediction.
Yeah. That's an interesting prediction. You can definitely see some merit in that too, with being, you know, what we talked about earlier with SharePoint, the brand kind of diminishing a bit. I mean, where's the Exchange piece to it? Where's the Link piece to it? Where's the directory synchronization and the integration with Azure? I mean, it's almost like, you know, we could see a full Microsoft Cloud part for business users and then Microsoft Cloud for developers and solution integrators and stuff. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is how ridiculous it is right now, right? So starting at the beginning of February, Project Conference, I can't actually remember the order these go in. Project Conference, Link Conference, SharePoint Conference, and Exchange Conference. So four product-centric conferences all in the space of 2 months during February and March. And that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I think those will all go away.
Yeah, it's a good prediction. Okay, last predictions here. And this is the one that, I guess, why don't we join the circus that everyone else is part of right now and why don't we pick a CEO for Microsoft, right?
You want to put some money on this?
Yeah, let's put some money on this. What do you want to say?
Yeah. What do we say? $50.
$50. That buys a, what was it, 4 lattes at Starbucks?
I don't drink at Starbucks. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah,
there you go.
Okay, yeah, and you don't like chocolate. All right, here we go. So I'm going to say that my prediction, this is interesting, right? Because you've got both CEO, and then I think we both agree that they need a chief architect, right? We need a chief,
yes.
We need a technical guy.
Desperately. It's been missing since Bill left.
Exactly, yeah. And so here's what my take is. A lot of good options out there. I personally was very happy to hear that Mallory, the Ford guy, pulled his name out of the hat. I thought that that would be the wrong direction for the company to go in.
I still don't know if that saga has played out entirely.
Yeah. Well, who knows? It can always, something can creep up. But my pick, if I got to choose, my pick would probably be, and I'm going to say his name wrong, but the Satya Nadella.
Satya,
yeah. So yep. This is the gentleman who's been in charge of the Azure business for a while, has done a phenomenal job really building the business up, seeing a lot of real growth here. I think that this is going to be a really good thing going forward, that he would be a really good leader for the company, both on the technical side and from the business side. And then as far as an architect goes, I'd love to see Scott Guthrie take that role. If he wasn't the CEO, I think I would like to see him potentially be the architect, the chief architect, over Scott Goo. Nothing against Scott Goo, but I think it'll be interesting to see where they go with this. This is really going to define the direction the company is going in, because, I mean, to me, I think we're seeing the Microsoft brand slip quite a bit over the last few years. And we even look at something like Windows 8 that has been as big, if not a bigger disappointment, than really where we were with Vista. I don't see that really changing path any direction soon. I think there's been a lot of arrogance on Microsoft's part and very little caving about things as stupid and as simple as a start menu or, you know, trying to make, I get, and it's a matter of opinion, but, you know, trying to make your tablet OS be the same as your desktop and your server kind of interface, the Metro kind of look and feel, does it make sense? So, I don't know how much of that is CEO, but they set the tone for the organization. They set the attitude for the organization. I hope that somebody comes in, and the biggest hope is that someone comes in and does a huge shaking of the tree, and we see some big changes come out of the company a couple of months after he comes in or she comes in.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a huge announcement when it does happen. And along similar lines, I really, really, really want Stephen Elop as the CEO, and people think I'm nuts for that because of how things have gone with Nokia, but if you look at when Elop joined Nokia, they were a smidgen away from complete disaster. And sure, they're not in exactly the greatest of shape now, but they have managed to put out a ton of interesting products, and they were dealing with a pretty grim and dire situation. So that's my first reason why I think he's good. The second reason why I think he's good is he just oozes respect from the industry. Like every tech pundit, reporter, valley knob, whatever you want to call them, whenever they go talk to him, they always walk in into a situation going, this guy's going to suck. He's this, you know, older guy from boring company and all that sort of stuff. And they always come away saying he's a very nice guy, he's very respectable, listens, and when he talks, doesn't sound like a complete tool. He knows what he's talking about. So I would love seeing somebody with that level of respect being in that position, because I don't think it should be any surprise to anybody that the tech press have zero respect for Balmer. So I would like to see some of that come back. Having said that, I don't think he could do it alone, and he definitely needs a really, really strong chief software architect if that's going to happen. And so I'd love to see the Goo step into that. Satya as well. I don't think the Goo will get it just because he's not senior enough in the company right now, which is a shame because I think they need like some young upstart to totally own that position.
Agreed.
Rather than just toe the line and cause a bunch of mayhem. So I'd love to see somebody a bit younger and a bit more junior. It's funny calling it like a CVP junior at Microsoft. But anywho, yeah, I'd love to see him get that job.
So you pick ELOP, huh?
I would like ELOP.
Uh-oh.
I don't think I'd put money on ELOP.
Ah, we're hedging. Okay.
I would like ELOP, but I actually am thinking I'm going to put money on Kevin Turner.
Wow.
And
wow,
I say that because he's an insider, and if Microsoft want a CEO who are going to drive the share price and drive investor returns, there's one person on the planet that could sell anything to anybody, and that's Kevin Turner. And unfortunately, I think he might get it, which would be a shame because I really don't think it's the right thing for the company. But if you make me put money on it, I think it'll be him.
It's interesting. You and I both are picking like people that we think would be good for the future of the company. And it seems to me that the people that always say something about Kevin Turner are always talking about the today. They're talking about
the
now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But the technical people are all going in a different direction.
Yeah, Kevin Turner would be like trying to squeeze more water from a sponge, whereas, you know, other CEO choices would be about getting a bigger sponge. Mm. So I would like to see ELOP. I definitely wouldn't like to see Kevin Turner, but who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Mullally. Oh, my point about Mullally is there's supposed to be – today's the 12th of December when we're recording this, and today there's supposed to be a board meeting at Ford, and Mullally is supposed to show up to it and is supposed to be being asked by the board what his plans are. And they want, according to the news, they want a firm answer. He came out and said there's no change of plans to stay at Ford. That doesn't mean he won't leave. I think that just means currently there's no public plans that have changed.
Mm.
But privately, who knows?
That's true.
I think it's a non-answer. So I think he's definitely still in the running.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see where they go with this.
Yeah. Last thing I think Microsoft needs is another big old company leader. They need a good swift kick in the pants and shake things up a bit.
Yeah, agreed. I'd really like to see this, them make a decision that's going to turn them in the direction of, or keep them going more in the direction of an Amazon, of an Apple, of a Google, and not go in the direction of like an Oracle or an IBM.
Yeah, definitely.
But
cool. So those are our predictions for 2014. I think we'll put them in the show notes. We've got a full transcript of the show up there so people can keep us honest. We'll revisit these as we go throughout the year and maybe we'll call score. But I got $50 on Kevin Turner and you got $50 on Satya, right?
Yeah, if we both lose, I don't know what we're going to do with that.
What are we going
to
do?
We probably have to drop $100 total into the next like share pint bar.
That sounds like a perfect idea. And on that note, we'll wrap things up. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.